Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin. If you care a lot about what you eat, you're going to learn a ton during this episode. My guest is a passionate person in general, and since giving birth recently to her first child, she has become extra passionate about pre- and postnatal nutrition. She's the founder of a company called 25-8 that aims to empower every woman to intuitively trust what her body guides her to eat before, during, and after pregnancy. She works to change the way we view eating for two, with regards to quality, not quantity, and every time I talk to her, I learn new things about the way food is produced and packaged and how the differences affect our minds and bodies. Erica Mock, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Dr. B. Pleasure to be here.
Finally.
I know.
I've been learning from you for so long and wanting to share you with the people, but you're a busy gal. I mean, you had two babies this year.
I did.
First, you had the human baby, and somewhere around 9 centimeters, you gave birth to a company.
Probably exactly at the same time, you're right.
Yeah. Let's talk about food and you. Where does your relationship about thinking about food, where does it date back to you?
That's a great question. I think probably I was actually in college, so I was about 22, and I started looking into food for my animals before myself, actually.
What kind of animals?
This was actually for a dog. Her name was Ella. She's no longer with us now, but she had a mammary tumor, and it was pretty daunting. And
was that essentially breast cancer for dogs?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I basically, she was on just a traditional dog food, and I took her off of all the food that she was eating. I made a completely raw diet with like all these organ meats, and like I handmade this stuff. It was kind of gross, but and then I used complementary medicine, and probably about 4 or 5 months later, we took her back for an ultrasound, and the tumor dissolved.
Wow.
So I was like, oh my gosh, like the power of food was shown to me through my animals.
Food is medicine.
Yeah. And then I kind of just started turning the microscope in on myself and seeing, you know, if this can help my dog this much, then what could it do for me?
But you're always pretty active.
Yeah. Yeah. Lifestyle-wise, yeah.
Lifestyle-wise. Sure. And did you always gravitate towards healthier foods or?
Ish. Healthy. It's kind of hard to explain it like as healthy. In college, I would say I was super active, you know, exercised a lot, and I'd just eat like the things you thought you were supposed to eat when you're healthy, like chicken and vegetables and yogurt and like nothing.
Right, so that's healthier than, let's say, donuts and pizza. And
for sure. Yeah, for sure.
But ultimately, you kind of went deeper in your exploration for what is healthy. And that's what I want to do here today.
Yeah.
So take us on that journey. So what does that mean? Because I would think, like you said, chicken and all the veggies you just mentioned sound healthy, but
oh, of course, yeah, it definitely. I mean, it is, but I think the discovery that I had was through my mentor and my closest friend, still to this day, Aaliyah Wick. She's a Chinese medicine practitioner, and she taught me about the relationship between us and food and the energetic qualities of food in complementary medicine, like meaning with eating with the seasons. So, for example, we are.
You don't mean salt, pepper, and garlic.
Not seasonings.
Oh, right.
Right, seasons. So, like, we're entering into spring very soon. The equinox is, like, next week, I think.
Sure.
So I'm already breaking into, like, things like the nettles. The flavor of the spring is sour, and the organs are the liver and gallbladder. So I...
Oh, different seasons have different flavors and organs?
And colors.
And colors?
Everything.
Well, colors that you see, colors that you're supposed to eat?
Both. So what do you see a lot in spring?
Chicken, spring chicken.
Well, I guess not in California. Green, like things are supposed to be green again.
Oh, you
right?
mean outdoors? After I never go outdoors, so okay. I wouldn't know. I see my walls.
You see your walls.
They seem the same color.
Yeah, no, they're different in the spring.
I mean, in spring, everything springs, so you see a lot of greens.
Exactly. So it's like the winter is kind of an introspection, a time for introspection and really going inside. And if you think about winter weather in most places, you cozy up indoors in front of the fireplace. You eat warm things like soups and broths and, you know, that's all a culminating thing, right?
Have you been to Australia?
I haven't.
It's different.
Yeah.
They got it backwards.
Opposite.
So if you're down under, just picture summer.
Yes.
But back to the rest of us.
So clearly I have a lot to learn still.
No, I'm trying to school you. I'm just trying to tell people.
It's different.
Down under, it's backwards.
Yeah.
But they know they're, you know, relatively backwards.
So the toilet flushes the other way, right?
Does it? I don't know. Family trip, Dan.
We need to go to Australia.
He's busy with
Yes.
We're going to go to Australia, all of us, both families. Okay, back to us.
Yes. So what were you saying?
In winter, introspective.
Right.
So what does that mean food-wise? I mean, it makes sense that everything kind of goes inside and, you know, almost like the turtle in its shell, all the leaves come off. And
Yeah. You shed your leaves in the fall, and in the winter, the tree's still alive. The water's still running up and down in the tree. Like, it's still living and breathing, but it looks kind of dead, right, from the mm-hmm. outside. But it's doing all its work on the inside. So spring is the first time where we actually, like, come back out again. So that's why a lot of times during the winter, we avoid strenuous exercise and, you know, eating foods that have a lot of raw, like raw foods are said to kind of kill or die down the digestive fire. We need to stoke that fire in the winter. And as we move into summer, you can move into more raw foods because everything else is warming up. So the inside isn't as important to kind of regulate with your food.
So I said in the opening, trusting your instincts on what you eat.
Right.
This sounds like it would be instinctual eating.
Yeah.
If we didn't live in this modern society where you have everything all the time.
Exactly. Yes.
And are you seeing there's an overall health benefit to eating that way, even though we don't have to anymore?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, everything synchronizes to the earth, right? Like, as much, as far removed as we are in modern culture, we still are very much connected to, like, the magnetism of, like, the moon and different, you know, energetic things. They're kind of unexplainable. So to me, food is really, like, such an easy connection to have. Like, you don't have to go hippy-dippy and go get a grounding mat and, like, you know, do the full moon rituals. You can, and that's amazing. But if you aren't that type of person, you can still connect to the earth by eating in this way and by syncing up your internal rhythms with the rhythms of the earth. And, you know, there's innumerable health benefits to that.
Our instincts aren't there anymore. So yeah. Where do, like, now we have to, our learnable intelligence has been sort of brainwashed.
Right.
Because every place you go, there's a billboard, something pops on your phone, there's a commercial, there's somebody singing a jingle, or you just walk by and you smell like the KFC. I don't know what. They're probably not going to be a sponsor anyway. So yeah. Whatever it is. But I'm saying it smells amazing, right?
Yeah.
And then all these messages are coming in saying, eat this, eat this, eat this. And they're all paid for, you know, there's also commercial benefit in every single one of those.
Yeah.
So now we have to, because they've drawn us away from our instincts, mm-hmm. we have to kind of re-educate that part of our brain to say, you know, this is what instinctually you would have been craving.
Right.
If you were in touch with your instincts and try to get that connection going again.
Mm-hmm.
But where do you do that? How do you do that? How does somebody like me do that?
How would you do that?
Because what you're saying makes sense.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, I guess this is part of how you do it. You just talk to Erica, but you're not always going to be there.
Yeah, listen to this podcast. That's what you do.
Every day.
Yeah, every day.
Share it with your friends at Dr. Berlin on YouTube and Instagram. Yeah. No, it isn't. It's on Dr. Berlin on Twitter and Instagram. Okay, back to you.
So I would say
that Doctor spelled out, D-O-C-T-O-R.
On Twitter or Instagram?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just FYI.
Okay.
I never self-promote, but I just thought.
I think it's important. I would definitely say there are a lot of good books. There's a book, I still have Breastfeeding Brain, even though I have a 14-month-old, Between Heaven and Earth.
Between Heaven and Earth?
Yeah. You're going to have to look up the author because I'm a very bad name.
Who doesn't
dropper.
Know the author of that?
I don't know. It really doesn't make sense to me, but it's an amazing book. And it decodes a lot of this stuff and puts it kind of into, like, very digestible bits.
That's a funny way to put it.
Yeah. Literally digestible.
Literally digestible bits.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, because it's hard sometimes to take it all at once.
Yeah. It absolutely is. It's a lot of information. And like you said, it's so completely opposite from what we're used to now that it takes some rewiring. And I think, you know, if you just kind of start doing it and start following this method and, you know, trusting yourself. And of course, all of our foods that we produce are always going to be aligned with the seasons, even with herbs. We have, that's it?
Yeah.
Who's it?
It's Harriet Bienfeld.
There you go.
And one more.
Incredible book right there.
Ephraim Korngold. It's Between Heaven and Earth, A Guide to Chinese Medicine.
Mm-hmm. In there, she talks about how it's just so amazing the information that she brings because I believe, like, her family is, you know, doctors and one of them is a surgeon. So very medical. And then she was in a line to go to become a doctor herself. And she just took this like way left turn and started learning about Chinese medicine. So she brings both to the table, and she's able to like not, you know, put down one or the other, but to show how different they are and where their strengths and weaknesses lie. And also just, I mean, it's just an incredible guide. And I'm...
You did it again. You said she brings it to the table. Literally, she's bringing it to the table. You know, in bite-sized digestible pieces.
Everything in my life is food.
I know.
Everything.
Welcome to my world. Yours is just more sustainable, healthy, and nutritious. And just as a side point, you came to our house one time and made this meal that it looked good.
Mm-hmm.
It smelled good. And it tasted good. And then what happened afterwards is sort of profound because I would normally like eat that before I ate lunch, some of that food.
Before you ate lunch?
Yeah. Some of those different dishes that you made, they look, in my view, light, I would say.
Oh, I see. Yes.
I would be like, oh, let's eat that while lunch, you know, like while dinner's cooking.
I got you.
I mean, some of it was not like that. It was heavier. But anyway, even after I ate those foods, they tasted so good. And I felt so energetic afterwards, but like... light, like I can get up and breathe and stuff. I don't have to like hold my belly in my hand, you know.
Yeah.
But I still had energy, like even though I felt like I ate lighter, which in my mind used to be a bad thing, like I want to eat big, strong, heavy, everything.
Mm-hmm.
I felt more energized afterwards. That was like a light bulb moment for me.
Was it?
Yeah, especially because it tastes so good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can get creative with the flavors and stuff. I think it's just not eating to be full. You know, it's a very different way of eating. And again, that's like an intuitive eating thing. So if I sit with a plate in front of me, like the digestion starts when you first start, like you look at your food and you're thinking about your food. And in Indian cultures, when you touch your food because you eat it with your hands.
Mm.
And then it goes into your mouth and you chew and then it becomes a part of you and you digest. So it's much less, you know, just fuel to kind of get up and do the next thing. It's pausing with that food and taking a moment. And really, like, thinking about what you're eating and what you're putting into your body that will be used as fuel later. But I could totally see how you'd think that that was – it was vegan, too, right?
It was also vegan. We're having vegan guests.
Yeah.
Right. So I know that you don't always cook vegan. But that's what it was, right? So I was looking at that food, and I was like –
There's, like, no big chunks of meat on your plate.
No. And also, I was looking at the vegans, and they're, like, they're sturdy people. Like, they're strong and healthy.
Totally.
I'm like, you're going to eat this, and but you eat it, and it's like, wow, there's a lot of energy in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Personally, I love vegan food. I just think it's fascinating what can be done with different things and, like, a cashew cheese. Like, I never in my life thought that I would enjoy cashew cheese, and I love it. But I also find that me, myself, that I thrive on animal, like, gamier meats, like bison and venison, and some of that they say has to do with your blood type too, like eating for your blood type. But I do find that I am strongest and the most vital when I do incorporate some meat into my diet. But for the most part, we eat mostly vegetables.
I do the opposite. I eat cashews made out of cheese.
Where do you find those?
Yeah, it's cheese cashew.
Oh, is that a new brand?
No, but it's sort of confusing for the brain. My little joke. Cashew cheese and cheese cashews. I used to say I eat those faux veggie dogs. They're made out of beef.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Took me a second.
I know.
I got you.
So how does, I mean, do you just keep researching more, studying more after college and after you see how it helps your doggy?
Yeah.
Do you just keep studying food more and more? I mean, it's a passion of yours.
Oh, yeah, it's a total... Oh, it's a complete lifestyle. I mean, it's turned into something that is so profound that I never thought I'd be here personally when I first started this journey. To me, actually, my boyfriend in college, when I was starting this, I was like, okay, I'm going to buy organic meat, right? That was my first decision. I'm just going to buy organic meat. And he laughed at me. He's like, what is that? Like, you're going to buy the rest of the stuff that's not good for you, but you're going to buy one thing that's good for you. But to me, that was the one small change that on a college budget and like, with this whole, all these changes in ahead of me, that small change was something that I could do in that moment.
Mm.
And then from there, I kind of, you know, broadened that with my food and then started buying organic and local. And then I looked at my chemicals that I use to clean my house. And I'm like, well, I could probably clean that up a bit too. So I started kind of getting more sustainable options there. And then moving to like body products. So it wasn't like one day I just threw away all my stuff and started over. That's really overwhelming. And I don't think that people, I wouldn't have learned very much that way. But every time I would reach a point in my life where I came up with a, maybe like an illness or something that affected me, like conception. Mm-hmm. It's a big one. So like for a lot of women, and I'm speaking for myself too, we're young and we're healthy and we don't have these huge, a lot of us don't have these huge life-altering diseases very early in our life, right? So the first time we really kind of realize like, maybe something's not right is when we're having difficulty conceiving, mm-hmm. right? And that plagues a lot of women. And that was kind of one thing that like kind of woke me up, and not that it was difficult per se to get pregnant, but just like realizing like, yeah, I was healthy and then I could take it up a whole nother level and do like a preconception care package with Alex, my midwife. She does them, and look at like, okay, what are you eating? What is your blood work like? What is your lifestyle like? How's your emotional and mental space, your body?
Those are all, like all of my least comfortable questions to be asked.
Are they?
Yeah.
Why is that? You should dig deeper.
Because I like to ignore. I'm a guy. Like, yeah. I even in my office, I find it, I'm generalizing, but it's true.
Yeah.
As a generalization, we ask a question like, how long have you been having these symptoms, right?
Right.
And men will, you know, women sometimes will be like, it just started this morning, so I called right away to take care of it, you know, or yesterday or a week ago.
Yeah.
Men will be like, they'll come in coughing up blood. They'll be like, I've had it for 13 years. I thought it would go away. This is how we are. I don't know why. We're just programmed to not really take care of ourselves, plow through it, ignore it. It'll go away.
Yeah.
Women are more like, I don't know. It's a generalization, but that's how I see it at the office.
Well, you see a lot of people, so I'm sure that you get a good understanding of that.
Sure. Exceptions to every rule.
Yeah.
But that's, I don't know. Yeah, when people ask those questions, I get uncomfortable. I'm like, I don't want to know the answer to any of those things. Because then I have to do something about it.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? But then I see the people like you who do something about it, and you're just living life on a different level, just healthy, energetic, exuberant, and getting stuff done.
Yeah, but it didn't start like that. Like,
I
that's
know.
The thing. It's
piece
just
by piece.
One little decision at a time. One decision can change the whole course of your life.
I remember when my wife wanted to start eating organic, even just produce, forget about the meat and stuff, and it reminded me of what Louis Anderson said. He went into a Whole Foods and he's like, all right, how much are the organic bananas? And they're like $3.99 a pound. And it's like, how much are the regular ones? And I'm like, they're free. You just take them. Nobody wants them. He's like, all right, I'll take a bunch of free bananas and some of those organic stickers.
That's awesome.
That's how I was at the beginning. I'm like, they look the same, hon. This one's like an extra whatever per pound.
I know. It's...
But there's a reason for it. And in our second half, when we come back, I want to talk about all those different classifications of food. Like, why do we buy organic either meats or chickens or produce? And what's the difference between all the different labels they stick on them? Cage-free, free-range, grass-fed, things like that. But I think what you're saying is it's true. Like, if you don't have to throw everything out, but when you run out of soap, when you run out of deodorant, when you run out of cleaning products, when you run out of shampoo, when you run out of laundry detergent, just, you know, think about what it is that's in there before you get your next replenishment.
Yeah. Try something else.
Yeah.
Totally.
Or just like, yeah, look at the ingredients and, just, you know, if you can't pronounce it, Google it. And see what that ingredient is.
Yep.
And it's kind of interesting how sometimes you can just use something simple in the house, like vinegar, all the things you do with vinegar.
Totally.
And it's like, oh, yeah. In that case, I can not have all those chemicals in my life, and vinegar's cheap.
Vinegar's super cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, you save a lot of money on cleaning products using vinegar.
You know, in doing my research on cesarean birth, I do this presentation for doulas, midwives, doctors, on the history of the cesarean birth.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways cesarean started to become more safe when we would survive them is after the invention of antiseptics by Joseph Lister of Listerine fame. And I found out that Listerine started off as a floor cleaner.
What?
And it made me feel so good about it because my kids spill so much of that crap on the floor. I'm like multi-purpose.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, just...
A floor cleaner.
That's what I read.
What?
Google it.
I'm going to have to.
Hey, Siri. All right, this is going fast. So when we come back in just a minute, we're going to talk much more specifically about, you know, different types of food categories, labels, and find out how we can practically bring some of your magic into our home. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Erica Mock. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We're talking to Erica Mock. All right, break some of this stuff down for me. Like when you go shopping for food, what are we looking for?
Where are you shopping?
Why don't we start with that? Where's a great place to shop?
Farmers markets.
Why farmers markets?
Because someone told me this statistic the other day, and you're going to have to fact check me, but they said something like 4 to 7 cents of every dollar spent in like a grocery store is kept in the community, where like 94 to 97 cents of that dollar is kept in the community when you shop at a farmer's market versus like, you know, I don't want to name drop, but like a Whole Foods or like a, you know, whatever.
A.K.A. Amazon.
Ralph or okay. Amazon. Yeah, right?
I have a close personal relationship with Ralph.
Do you?
No, but at the farmer's market.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. You get to know, like, and it's not just like, you know, buying your food locally. And then, of course, it's, you know, more sustainable and, you know, it has to travel less miles to get to where you are, right?
So it's not exhausted.
It's not tired. No, right. It's not. But it's also more vital.
You are. You're talking about, you're looking, when you walk around there, you're looking at farmers who either raise livestock or grow fruits and vegetables or grains.
Yep.
And they know intimately the food that you're, it's the source.
Yeah.
They're the ones who grew it.
The source, yeah.
It's not even Ralph. It's not even the grocer. It's right. The farmer.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to think about the amount of time, from the point that the vegetable's picked, let's just talk about a vegetable, and it was like picked. Right? It starts dying then, slowly, right? So those vegetables that were picked at the farmer's market were picked like the day or two before, and they're right there. Or sometimes it could be like weeks later where they're preserved, right, with a proper temperature and humidity and other things that, you know, the grocery store makes sure happens.
For longevity.
But they're dying. They're like closer to, yeah. So like that's another thing. And honestly, then you get into like organic and not organic. It's very expensive to get the organic certification. And honestly, if you know the farm and you know the farmer and you trust them or you've visited their farm and they don't use X, Y, and Z chemical that are still allowed to be used under the organic certification, but they don't use it, I would probably go with them over a certified organic farmer.
That's one thing that's kind of amazing about you. You know your food. You know where it's coming from, your sources for yourself and for your company.
Right.
I always tell people, because I rave about your stuff, and they're like, what do you mean beyond organic? Which I'm going to ask you what that means to you. But I'm like, this, in my mind, the sourcing, how you know where everything was planted and nurtured and grown and cut and harvested and brought every step of the way, you know it.
Yeah.
And when it comes to like, you know, chicken and beef and fish, if Erica's eating chicken, she probably knew its name. And it's sort of true.
Yeah.
Yes, so farmers markets, they make sense.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at different categorizations of food, right, the word organic, does that mean anything? What does it mean? Is that the word I'm supposed to be looking for?
Yeah, and that's like, so glad you brought that up, because that is a very common question and an important one. And One that I think is kind of getting a little greenwashed, which is crazy, right? Because organic is the way things are just supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, it's not like something extra or special. It's just the way that it's supposed to be naturally without as much human interference with whether it's chemicals or whatever. So now, you know, some of the legislation is kind of changing, and, you know, companies are realizing they can make a lot more money on organic. So again, this is knowing where your food comes from and knowing the farmers and knowing what really is like a priority, if that makes sense. Like, for you as a consumer, if you go to the farmers market and you have a conversation with them and you ask them, you know, if they use chemicals when they cultivate or like to for, you know, pest control, or, you know, you talk to them and they'll be honest and upfront with you about what they're using, what they're not. I think that's more important than the organic certification. So if you're already at the farmer's market, you know the farmer, you know the location it's coming from, you know that the farmer cares about, you know, whatever they say, right? And that they're ethical, then I would choose that over going to Whole Foods and picking something that had an organic stamp on it that came from Mexico or Brazil, or do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's funny that you said like organic should just be the standard.
Yeah.
And then everything else should be labeled like non-organic or
right.
something like that. Mitch
yeah.
Hedberg, do you know Mitch Hedberg? Comedian. He used to say that like corn on the cob is a funny term to him because he's like, that's just corn.
Yeah,
that should be corn. Called corn, and like niblet should be called corn that was chopped off the cob.
Yeah, that's so true.
What do you mean when you say beyond organic?
Beyond organic. So when I say that, I'm usually talking about meat.
Okay.
Animal products.
Okay. So that everything we just talked about was plant-based, but when you come to animal products, yeah.
Yeah. It's a different ballgame because me having the history, I mean, I have horses and I've cared for cattle before and I've had chickens. And so like coming from that background and knowing the nutritional needs of animals, I see it in a much different light where, you know, we were talking the other day and you said, oh, so-and-so carries, you know, organic kosher beef. And then I told you, well, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that they were fed what they were designed to eat.
But it's more expensive.
It is more expensive because they're feeding organic grain.
That's not a good enough sign.
Right? No, it's not always indicative of the best choice.
So organic means that they're eating non...
Yeah, they're eating... Well, it depends on the farm, obviously. But typically, if you're just buying organic, it means that they're eating like an organic grain or an organic... They can even be fed organic corn or, you know, whatever they're eating mm-hmm. is organic and non-GMO.
Okay.
So when I say beyond organic, that means... So a cow is a ruminant, right? So they have multiple stomachs. Mm-hmm. So they're meant to ferment their food, right?
So they eat it, it goes down into one stomach.
Yep.
Hangs out in the fermenting tank.
Yep.
Comes back up to another stomach.
Yep.
Ferments. And then that keeps happening.
Yeah. So basically, you know, they're not really designed to eat things like grain or corn.
Oh.
They were designed to eat grass.
Hmm.
Right? Same with horses. So a lot of horse, and that's different because we don't eat those, of course, or I certainly don't. But, you know, same type of thing that you run into with horses and all these different diseases that come up from the, you know, introduction of grain. So with the cow, what I look for is, okay, I'm talking to the farmer. If they have a short supply during winter, I know that they're being pretty genuine and honest, right? There's a season for beef.
Because there's less grass?
Yeah, there's less grass. There's like less moving around. They move them back in for the winter season. Like they bring the cattle in, right? And they don't harvest during that time because it's just that time of year, right? It's like it's the same time of year when we all kind of go inside and we all start eating different foods. Like the same thing for the animals. They're on the same rhythm.
Interesting.
So in the spring, you know, they'll start like the harvest, right? The roundup, and they'll start harvesting, and then you'll have meat all through the summer. So I'm asking them these questions like, okay, this cow, is it ever fed any grain? And that means, you know, if it's in like a sill, like the cow goes and eats grain, or in like the form of a supplement, like a pasture cake, mm-hmm. right? It's another form of grain. So that has to be a no answer. Then from there, I ask them, you know, what do they use for fly control? Because flies are a problem. A lot of farmers will take like pesticides and they'll put them on the cow, like on their skin itself for fly control. So that has to be a no, right? And then from there, I'm asking, okay, so when they're harvested, how far do they travel from where they were living, where they spent their life on grass, from beginning to end to where they actually get processed. And then when they're there at the facility, how long from when they arrived until the time that they're processed, how long do they have to kind of settle in and get they're so stressed out, right? From the travel, from the transport. So they need to have at least 24 hours there to like chill out, zen out, you know, get all the cortisol back flowing from in their bloodstream, and then they're processed. Mm. And then also during that time when they're at the facility, what are they eating? Are they eating grain or are they eating silage, which is cut grass from the location that they came from?
Ooh.
Right?
That's a lot of effort.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I mean, I know like where we get our meat from, like they know me by name because I ask these ridiculous questions all the time.
So, but there's no way, like if I am going to a local health food store or supermarket, there's no way to just, without knowing the farmer, are there telltale signs to look for? Is there?
Yeah, I would say if it's pretty safe if you can see like 100% grass-fed and grass-finished. Mm-hmm. The USDA recanted its definition of grass-fed. So technically, like if they ate grass, they could be grass-fed.
Oh, if they had like just a little bit of grass and mostly corn and grain?
I mean,
still grass-fed, technically?
Technically, yeah. I don't know if they're actually, I mean, again, it depends on if they're an ethical business or not. They wouldn't say that. But if you see 100% grass-fed and grass-finished, meaning it finished its life on grass, mm-hmm. I'd probably hang my hat on that.
Okay.
Luckily enough, even in the grocery stores, I do know a lot of like the Whole Foods, like Eel River, which is a great company to purchase meat from. I just recognize, you know, the different farms
the
because
levels.
I have made those phone calls to them before.
So this is why I said every time I sit down and I talk to you, I learn stuff.
Yeah.
And it makes me be a little more inquisitive, you know, when I'm going out to hunt and gather my own food. From Instacart. So
yeah.
What made you, because you literally had a baby. I mean, I worked with you during your pregnancy.
Do you remember when I first told you about this business?
Yeah. And then you blew me away because you had the baby.
Yeah.
You told me during pregnancy that you were going to do something.
Uh-huh.
Then you had the baby. And then you told me again after pregnancy, you're going to do something. And then you called and you're like, hey, can I run some menus by you? Like, we already have, like, things rolling. We're almost ready to be sending out samples. I'm like, what? Because normally, like, to start any business, especially a food business, is so intense and so overwhelming with just even paperwork and regulations. And and the thought and effort that you put into your business is, goes above and beyond. And you had, like, a newborn.
Yeah.
But there was a passion. Like, you wanted to do this for a reason other than starting a business. What drove you?
Honestly, this whole motherhood thing has just totally rocked my world. And the respect, not that I didn't have respect for women or myself before, the amount of respect and reverence that I have for women and mothers in particular, which is why my business is geared towards us, has totally changed my perception of everything. And to me, food is such a gift of nourishment, the gift of nourishment. It's the ultimate gift that you can give someone. So after going through birth and like understanding what it really took to get here, to get where I am, I had to, there was no if, it was when. Like, how can I take all this knowledge and information I have and use this to enrich this community and to bring it just another level, another step higher? Like, that changed everything.
Yeah, and I think that's the passion that really drove you to do this now.
Yeah, right. Totally.
Instead of like, oh, let's wait a year and a half or 2 years until things are more stable and settled, you know, in the home front, and then, you know, launch a business.
Yeah. Well, I hope Aiden, you know, he's young. He's 14 months, but
he's also always around you.
He is. I mean, he...
You're managing to do both at the same time.
Koala care saved me. Like, Koala he's care. Just in my ergo all the time.
Yeah.
So it's great.
That's good for the chiropractor, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I need to see you, actually.
you know, we're not going to have a chance on this episode, but I actually would love to maybe have you back and talk about your pregnancy and birth story, because it's also pretty inspiring.
That would be awesome. I'd love to.
What kind of foods, specifically pre and postnatal, are important at that time? Different than, you know, general nutrition?
I would say this kind of backs up to our intuitive eating talk earlier.
Mm.
Your intuition when you're pregnant, I felt more tapped into knowing what I needed then than I had in my entire life before.
Just naturally, like your body was telling you?
I'm sure, yeah. Right? Because we are, I mean, that's just such a unique little snippet of time in our lives. And, you know, we're gifted with this crazy power of, like, smell, right? And, like, our tastes change and, like, all these things change. And I do feel that our body drives us towards certain things, like cravings, mm-hmm. right? To show us, like, you know, yeah, this, you need more of this.
That's a really good point. You don't normally have cravings like
not
that.
Not that intense.
But they're famous during pregnancy.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's one thing I would say for pregnancy. Like, for me, my thing was salmon. And I don't really eat fish. I don't really like it. When I was pregnant, I craved salmon. Like, it was like, I'm salivating thinking about it now. Like, it was like the, the most important thing on this planet, and you had to eat it. Like, I felt this pull towards salmon.
Wow.
And I don't really know why. I mean, of course, we can go to like the micronutrients of salmon, right? And know that there's all these different things and compounds and whatever, right? That's not the point. The point is that my body was telling me something, and I listened. And I hope that, you know, women feel empowered, especially during pregnancy, to tap in and listen to that feeling and let that guide their decisions that they make for what they're eating.
Not to be cliche, but isn't for a lot of people that internal drive that must-have thing Häagen-Dazs?
Yeah, like pickles and ice cream.
Yeah.
I mean, you could look at it as like vinegar. Like, pickles are fermented foods, right? So that's like a digestive tonic.
So it could be kimchi, but it's just pickles because that's what we're used to.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, ice cream, that's a great source of, I mean, not a great source of fat. It's just like a source of fat, right? So you could be craving ice cream and kind of just change course and supplement it with something. Maybe it's still ice cream, but it's ice cream made with like local local raw organic dairy.
Oh, I see what you did there. Law. Local
yeah,
raw.
Law.
You should save time.
We should, yeah. I'm going to start doing that.
Acronym. L-O-L.
Choose the highest and best form of whatever it is you're craving and eat it. Like, maybe it's not Häagen-Dazs, but it's just like a much higher quality, fewer ingredients, no chemical added ice cream.
Cream, yeah.
Yeah, a cream. Exactly.
Maybe there's Wild Atlantic Ben and Jerry's.
Oh.
Okay.
That sounds
maybe
awful.
That's a bad idea.
That sounds awful. It's okay.
That's why they don't ask me to help with the flavors.
Well, you did say postnatal too. So like during the first 30 days, of course, there's – I did a traditional Chinese postpartum where, you know, not traditional. I didn't do it to like that extent, but – I didn't eat any or drink anything cold for 30 days. Like, everything was heated and warm. A lot of
just
porridges.
Just replacing warmth that you've lost?
Exactly. And restoking that digestive fire.
Porridge.
Porridge. No raw vegetables. Everything was really cooked. A lot of bone broths. It was almost like eating for winter. And luckily, my birth was in winter, so I wasn't, like, eating broth.
You're so calculated.
I did it on purpose.
Yeah, totally. I bet.
Or nature did, I guess. and just kind of trying to restore all of your nutrients. And, you know, for a while, actually, I would put liver in. Yes, liver. In with anything I could.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that I couldn't taste it because I really
don't
like
liver.
The taste.
You don't like liver and you don't like fish. Known to self.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
If I ever cook for Erica.
No liver, no fish.
No river, no fish, no Wild Atlantic Ben and Jerry's.
No, definitely not.
See, you're much better at this than I am. I mean, people love your food. I love your food.
Thank you.
They get it, and the packaging is, like, so thoughtful.
Yeah.
And environmental conscious, and the food itself is all that nutrition you're talking about with really great flavors. I mean, sometimes I'm the lucky beneficiary of some samples.
Yeah.
And you turn me into, like, a superhero. Someone will be leaving, and as they check out, I'm like, hey, check this out from 25.8. And then they'll eat it right there in front of me and just,
That's awesome. That's a reaction I get a lot, actually. I love that face. I'm like, yeah, you can have that, like, every day.
Yeah.
You can
get that delivered to your door.
Yeah, right.
And then the next time they come alive is dum-dums. I'm like, oh, sorry.
Oops.
Time to order.
That's okay.
Well, time is winding down,
mm-hmm.
sadly, because I can go on for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Where can we find you online?
My website, twentyfiveeight.com. It's all spelled out, twenty-fiveeight.com.
So you put the dash between the 20 and the 5.
Mm-hmm. I got out on my spelling bee when I was in third grade because of a hyphen like that.
In the wrong place?
No, that I forgot it. I was spelling like 20-something and I left it out. And it's kind of funny that now there's a hyphen in my business name, right?
It all comes back. Those formative years.
I will never forget that.
This, you probably have had this name brewing since then. If I ever start a company, I don't care what it is. It's going to be called, it's going to have a hyphen.
Definitely.
Let's call it something with a hyphen.
Yep.
So 20-58.com. And right now, in terms of your food delivery, it's fairly local, although you have a kind of a growing distribution.
I do. I am like so close to being able to ship. And that would be to like Arizona all the way up to the Pacific Northwest for now. Mm-hmm. So that's coming soon. I don't know how soon, probably within the next quarter or so. But right now it's LA and Orange County. Mm-hmm. So, but if you go through at the end of checkout, you can put your zip code in and make sure that you're in a deliverable area.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Erica, thanks a zillion for sharing your knowledge and your passion.
Thank you for having
me and with the audience. And like I said, we hope to have you back soon.
Sounds great.
At home, you guys have been sending in a lot of suggestions and we love them all. We read every single one and we eventually get back to you, if not right away. So send your thoughts, ideas, and suggestions to info@informedpregnancy.com.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not even diaper rash.